Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryankara Bhavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Page 22. When your queen piteously fell at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, after her hair was rudely loosened before the public by the abusive Kauravas, it was he who then decided that the hairs on the heads of the queens of Kuru would be loosened in grief over the loss of their husbands in the Kurukshetra war. Sri Krishna saved us from the wrath. Okay, so then because of this, they're insulting, you know, the chaste wife of the Pandavas. And is loosened, so she's feeling anxiety. So then the same would happen then to the Kauravas, but it would be slightly different situation in that the loosening would be due to the death of their husbands. Right? Like that. Sri Krishna saved us from the wrath of Durvasa Muni. In the purport to verse 11, the wonderful story of Durvasa Muni's visit to the Pandavas with his 10,000 disciples is recounted in detail by His Divine Grace. Durvasa Muni had about 10,000 disciples, and wherever he visited and became a guest of the great Kshatriya kings, he used to be accompanied by a number of followers. Once he visited the house of Duryodhana, the enemy cousin of Maharaj Yudhishthira. Duryodhana was intelligent enough to satisfy the Brahmana by all means, and the great Rishi wanted to give some benediction to Duryodhana. Duryodhana knew his mystic powers, and he knew also that the mystic Brahmana, if dissatisfied, could cause some havoc, and thus he designed to engage the Brahmana to show his wrath upon his enemy, cousins, the Pandavas. When the Rishi wanted to award some benediction to Duryodhana, the latter wished that he would visit the house of Maharaj Yudhishthira, who was the eldest and chief among all his cousins. But by his request, he would go to him after he had finished his meals with his queen, Draupadi. Duryodhana knew that after Draupadi's dinner, it would be impossible for Maharaj Yudhishthira to receive such a large number of Brahmana guests. And thus the Rishi would be annoyed and would create some trouble for his cousin, Maharaj Yudhishthira. That was the plan of Duryodhana. Durvasa Muni agreed to this proposal, and he approached the king in exile. According to the plan of Duryodhana, after the king and Draupadi had finished their meals, it's because the point is you feed everyone first, then the king and his wife will eat, right? So in other words, the Grihastha couple will be the last to eat. They'll have taken care of the guests, dependents, everybody else. I've seen this. On his arrival at the door of Yudhishthira, Maharaj Yudhishthira, he was at once well received, and the king requested him to finish his noontime religious rites in the river, for by that time the foodstuff would be prepared. Durvasa Muni, along with his large number of disciples, went to take bath in the river, and Maharaj Yudhishthira was in great anxiety about the guests. As long as Draupadi had not taken her meals, food could be served to any number of guests. But the Rishi, by the plan of Duryodhana, reached there after Draupadi had finished her meals. When the devotees are put into difficulty, they have an opportunity to recollect the Lord with rapt attention. So Draupadi was thinking of Lord Krishna in that dangerous position, and the all-pervading Lord could at once know the dangerous position of his devotees. He therefore came there on the scene and asked Draupadi to give whatever food she might have in her stock. Under being so requested by the Lord, Draupadi was sorrowful because the Supreme Lord asked her for some food and she was unable to supply it at that time. She said to the Lord that the mysterious dish which she had received from the sun god could supply any amount of food if she herself had not eaten. But on that day, she had already taken her meals, and thus they were in danger. Right? So it's just in the day, it's not every time you cook. By expressing her difficulty, she began to cry before the Lord, as only a woman would do in such a position. The Lord, however, asked Draupadi to bring up the cooking pots to see if there was any particle of foodstuff left. And on Draupadi's doing so, the Lord found some particle of vegetable sticking to the pot. The Lord at once picked it up and ate it. After doing so, the Lord asked Draupadi to call for her guests, the company of Durvasa. Bhima was sent to call them from the river. Bhima said, "Why are you delaying, sirs? Come on, the food is ready for you." But the Brahmanas, because of Lord Krishna's accepting a little particle of food, felt sumptuously fed, even while they were in the water. They thought that since Maharaj Yudhishthira must have prepared many valuable dishes for them, and since they were not hungry and could not eat, the king would feel very sorry, so it was better not to go there. Thus they decided to go away. This incident proves that the Lord is the greatest mystic, and therefore he is known as Yogeshwara. Another instruction is that every householder must offer food to the Lord, and the result will be that everyone, even a company of guests, numbering 10,000, will be satisfied because of the Lord's being satisfied. That is the way of devotional service. So again, we see here, it's not numbers, it's not volume, it's not these material considerations, it's pleasing the Lord. If he's pleased, everyone will be pleased, no matter what the volume is. Does that make sense? It's not you thinking that, oh, we'll cook less volume because Krishna is pleased, then it's like the offense, you know, doing offense on the strength of the holy name. This is that you sincerely try to please Krishna and the Vaishnavas, so because Krishna is pleased, the Vaishnavas will be happy. Yes.
How do we define everybody?
Everybody.
Yes. Everybody will be pleased if Krishna is pleased.
And what are your considerations of everybody?
I mean, is it everybody in the house, in the town?
That means it's who you're supposed to take care of.
So it's whoever is involved in the in the thing.
So that means the single brahmachari with his bucket of halwa. He will be pleased.
That was the main concern.
Okay. So don't have to worry. Yes.
Maharaj, we see in the last few chapters that devotees of Krishna, they have personal relationship with him and they remember him.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it's a little different. So how do we engage in smarana, Vishnu smarana?
But it's based on the relationships with the devotees. Because here it's like the problem wasn't technically Arjuna's, it was Yudhishthira's. Because he's who's hosting the guests, he's the elder brother.
Yeah.
So Arjuna is included in that, being the younger brother, their assistance to their elder brother, but it's not technically his problem. It's Yudhishthira's problem. Right? So now he's remembering that.
Yes.
Like that. So we can do the same.
Remember the pastimes of the Lord with his devotees?
Yes, yes. So it's the same thing. So because the devotees are important, therefore then we can remember the Lord who's connected to them. It's the same principle. You know, so, and because the Lord's absolute, then there's no problem in distance. It's not that, well, that's so long ago or so many devotees back. There's no distance. This is the Lord. Lord is always present. So it's just if you remember him, then he's there. It's not that he's far away. He's far away if you're not connected to him. But if you're connected to him, then he's very close. He's sitting in the heart. Remember, it was talking, Rupa Goswami is talking about the Lord's dham, where he resides. So now, it's already been explained as Antaryami. He is in everybody's heart. You know, and he's in every atom, between every atom. But that's where he's working. Right? But he resides where the devotees are remembering. Right? So if you remember, then that's his residence. And if you don't, he's there, but you know, we don't get the benefit because we're not thinking. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not about, well, why can't he make it? He is everywhere, so it's easy enough. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let us say, yeah, I mean, so we're thinking that there's a distance, and so therefore we have to remember the Lord, and then but he already is already there. It's just a matter of being aware of that.
But is it personal, actually?
Yes, it's personal. I mean, otherwise, why is he sitting in your heart? You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Just for example, when you're small and you get sick and you go to the bathroom toilet and you're sick and all that, who goes with you?
Mommy.
Okay. Will anybody else go?
No.
Okay. Now, your mommy's going with that. Now, what happens if you're, let's say, a worm in stool? Is your mommy going to go with you? No, but Krishna does. So how intimate is that? Yeah, so it doesn't, you know, in other words, even the situations your mom won't go, Krishna's going. You know what I'm saying? Then after Krishna, then it's your mom, of course. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Under remembering, can we consider reading, talking about?
Yes.
Reading,
yes.
Translating.
Yes, all of that is that. So anything that's hearing and chanting, then it's going to give rise to remembering. Just like if you hear, then you can chant. And then if the chanting, you'll remember. Right? It's just like, let's say you think of something, and you may remember it or not, but if you discuss it with somebody, then the chance of remembering it's greater. Right? So if you have some realization, if you share that, then it you remember it. Does that make sense? So the whole process of hearing and chanting is about remembering. Is that okay? So, in other words, the Lord is there out of affection. It's not he has to be. Right? You know, it's not that he goes and, you know, has his little card and checks in and, you know, he's got his job to do like that. Here it's because of affection he's with the living entity. It's just he's just waiting for the living entity to respond. You know, let's say, like, somebody very important is not well, you know, so they're, like, sick and sleeping and all that. So you might sit there waiting, right? And so then when they wake up, then you can reciprocate. But you're there anyway, even though they don't know it. So that's the position. Yeah. So then, you know, that side's taken care of. We just have to work on our side, right? But it's easy to know, to work on our side, knowing that that's there. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. It's just like, let us say you're sitting in the hospital and, you know, not well and you're alone.
Yes.
It's one thing. But if you know that people are there, it's another thing.
Right.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. Krishna's there.
So he gives us support.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So therefore then you can become inspired. Yeah? Okay. So Prabhupada's making the point, that is the way of devotional service. Satisfy the Lord, everyone's satisfied. Right? Like that. Okay, so that means everyone's satisfied, so they're not coming to your room looking for your bucket of all that.
Yeah. Feel secure.
Yes, yes. See, so Krishna takes care of everything. Yes. Only by Lord Krishna's influence could I astonish Lord Shiva with my fighting ability and thereafter reach the heavenly planets. Right? So here we have that the point is, what we see is being made here, it's not that it's the sad thing that Arjuna's lost his power. Right? It means he can't defend the queens against a bunch of cowherd men, right? With sticks, right? He has the Gandiva bow, he has all the astras, he's fought Shiva, he's fought Indra, he's fought everybody. But then the problem comes is here's a bunch of cowherd men with sticks. You know, it means the sticks, not that they're trained in stick fighting. It's the stick that they take the cows out with and they lean on, you know, and, you know, stuff like that. It's just a stick, you know. And so he was defeated by them. So that's normal. Okay, let's say we take you, put you out in the middle of a field and bring in, you know, thousands of cowherd men with sticks. How are you going to do?
Not
so good. Okay. So that's pretty standard. So that it didn't work so well with Arjuna, then that's just ordinary. So what's special is that in all these other situations, Arjuna could do what he did.
Yes.
So that's what he's remembering.
Yes.
There Indra and the demigods took shelter of my arms in the campaign against the demon Nivatikavacha. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Lord Krishna withdrew the Kauravas' strategic intelligence and their enthusiasm for battle. And so their expert arrangements for victory came to naught. Because they had a bigger army and they had greater generals. Because on their side, the general was Bhima. That was the thing. Bhima was their general. Like that. Not that he's good. But I'm saying compared to Bhishma or Drona, then there wouldn't be a comparison here. Plus, they had a much greater army. Right? They had greater volumes of these Maharatis. But by Krishna's arrangement, their strategic intelligence was lost. So Karna won't fight as long as Bhishma's around. Now that's stupid. Right, so that means Krishna removed their intelligence. Otherwise, why would they do that? You know, so things like that. And then, you know, then, how you say, Karna, his dealing with Shalya. You know, like that. That's just his intelligence is lost. Here's the only charioteer who can fight against Krishna. So what does that mean? That means he knows charioteer driving. And it's not that he's just a charioteer. He's a very renowned Kshatriya, right? He's one of these ones that could, you know, he could fight with Bhima, right? He may get defeated, but he could fight with him. No one else could physically fight with Bhima, right? Yes?
If Krishna obstructed the living entity's free will, wouldn't that be considered kind of against what his moral codes are?
How is he just obstructing the free will?
If he took away his intelligence?
That's just the modes of nature. If you're materialistic, then you're working under the modes. So it's not that your free will is that you can be involved in a material action or not. That's the limit of your free will. What will happen, that's not up to you. Just like, let's say, you get on a bus that's going from New York to Jersey, okay? Now, once you're on the bus, that's where your free will is getting on the bus. But after that, the bus is going to follow its own course. It's not your free will to tell the bus, hey, you know, why don't we, you know, I got to pick up my, you know, dry cleaning in Harlem. Can we just nick through there? It doesn't work like that. Then you want to do that, you got to get off the bus. Does that make sense?
So you're saying that the material modes were what interfered with his nature, it wasn't Krishna's?
No, it's just like Krishna's will is that, see, now what is their, the Kauravas, they're making an endeavor. Let's say you go to a store, okay, and you want to buy something, it's $20, okay, you plunk down on the counter $10, what happens?
Get it.
Huh?
They say, you need 10 more dollars.
Yes. Okay. So that means you don't have the karma, though you have the desire. Okay? Now, it's $20, you plunk down a 50. They give you change. You understand? So the whole point is they didn't have the karma to win. And so, how is that going to be done? It's by the loss of intelligence. It could have been by something else. It could have been that, you know, the Pandavas decided that before they're going to have the battle, they're going to go up on the top of the mountain and, let's say, you know, worship the sun god or something. And during the meantime, a tsunami came in and wiped out the Kaurava army. Yeah, you know, it could have happened, right? You know, it didn't, but, you know. you understand, or so many things could have, but so the, it's just through the loss of intelligence.
Okay.
Like that. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments, the absolute personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, expands himself by his plenary paramatma portion in everyone's heart, and thus he directs everyone in the matter of recollection, forgetfulness, knowledge, the absence of intelligence, and all psychological activities. 1515. As the Supreme Lord, he can increase or decrease the duration of life of a living being. Right? But it'll be based on your work. They have, see, according to Manu, if you insult a chaste woman, then you and your whole dynasty will disappear. It just says like magic. It's just like mist, and it just disappears. So, because they've insulted Draupadi, then already the lives of all of them are shortened. So they're all going to die in the battlefield. But it's all arranged as a nice pastime. It all happens at one time. So then the Kauravas there, all those kings that were supporting, because everybody was there. Somebody could have spoke up, right? Only Vikarna spoke up, right? But others could have spoken up. Therefore, that means anyone connected with anyone in the room, their life is shortened. Because in these severe cases, it's not just the individual. Normally, you do something, it goes to you. You do something very severe, and it affects everyone connected with you. Right? Just like it says the king. If he punishes somebody that's not supposed to be punished, right, or his punishment is wrong, then it will destroy not only him, his family, anyone connected to his family, and his whole kingdom. Right? So it's just... In other words, it's showing the greatness of don't offend the Vaishnavas. Don't take position of authority and misapply it. Right? Because Krishna is the authority. So then you're representing him. That means you have to judge by his laws. You don't judge by his laws, reaction will be there. You know, so it's not a matter of just feeling, well, oh, that doesn't matter, or we don't believe in that. It really doesn't. Little kids don't believe in gravity. You know, and they always get their arms and legs broken, right?
Then they start believing.
Yeah, then they start to notice, hey, what's this? You know, so it's just, they don't know about these things. You know, they're out there playing with sticks and all that, and then they whack some, you know, they whack each other, and then somebody gets hurt. They don't think it'll happen. Because in the movie, it doesn't happen. You know, they're just there. You know, it doesn't matter what happens. The hero, you know, doesn't need it. It always works out. You know, so in their mind, it's going to work like that. So that's the point, is it doesn't matter. Material nature, the laws are there. It functions in that way. So therefore, people will get the reaction. So that's why then it's important to connect everything back to Krishna. So then even if you don't know all the technicalities, because it's connected to Krishna, then it will work for you. Right? Does that make sense? You know, Draupadi technically didn't have any food. But the Durvasa and his followers were satisfied. So that's the point. It's not just, it's an actual connection. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, if there's an opportunity and you don't take it, but you talk about how a great opportunity it is, do you get the benefit?
No.
So that's the thing. You have to take it.
Yes.
As the Supreme Lord, he can increase or decrease the duration of life of a living entity. Thus the Lord conducted the battle of Kurukshetra according to his own plan. He wanted that battle to establish Yudhishthira as the emperor of this planet. And to facilitate this transcendental business, he killed all who were on the opposite party by his omnipotent will. The other party was equipped with all military strength, supported by big generals like Bhishma, Drona, and Shalya. And it would have been physically impossible for Arjuna to win the battle had the Lord not helped him by every kind of tactic. Such tactics are generally followed by every statesman, even in modern warfare, but they are all done materially by powerful espionages, military tactics, and diplomatic maneuvers. But because Arjuna was the Lord's affectionate devotee, the Lord did all this himself without personal anxiety by Arjuna. That is the way of the devotional service of the Lord. So we see here is the Lord does it himself. This is a very advanced state, because we would think, we generally take this as the lighter one, but this is actually the most advanced of them. Generally we would think the ones like, oh, Krishna gave Arjuna the potency and then he could do wonderful things. So that is an advanced stage. A more advanced is when the Lord just does it himself.
Yes.
Right? Because otherwise, like you mentioned, powerful espionages, military tactics and diplomatic maneuvers. This then Yudhishthir and the Pandavas would have to do themselves. Right? But it was Krishna took care of it himself personally. So that's the most advanced stage. But that seems to be the most simple, because we don't see the mechanics working. Right? But that's why these stories are here, because these are the most developed. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse. By his inconceivable influence, he took away their prarabdha karma, ayush. By his beauty, he stole their minds. By showing his power, he took away their enthusiasm to fight. Characterized by sharpness of mind, sahas. By his glance alone, he took away their ability to take up weapons, ojas. Characterized by sharpness of the senses. Right, because the ojas makes the senses sharp. Right, no ojas, the senses are dull. Right, so all these different things is this he did, because they're supposed to. The modes of nature will do it, but in here he did it himself personally. That's what's special, right? As we mentioned, because they've insulted Draupadi, they will be destroyed. So Maya will take care of it. But the Lord, so what she'll do is authorized by the Lord, and she'll take care of it. She knows what to do. But Krishna himself, because of his affection for the Pandavas, he took care of it himself personally. So it's not that they're not getting anything they don't deserve, just the Lord is taking care personally. That's the meaning of pastime. It's a personal interaction, it's not what's going on. Right? You know, the specialness is not that he's dancing on a 100-headed snake. You know, the point is the interaction with the devotees and the affection and why he's doing all these things. Right? He's doing that because the snake being there, he's poisoned the cows and cowherd boys. Right? So that, but he could have just, you know, thrown him out. He could have just, you know, he would have just, in so many ways he could get rid of him. But he does it in an amazing way so that he attracts the mind of the devotees. Does that make sense? So that's the meaning of pastimes. His energies will already take care of everything. That's the meaning of omnipotent. Whatever he desires happens. But from devotion, he does it personally. You know, like, you know, they say, like the big man, he has so many people to do everything for him, but then if a good friend comes, instead of telling the secretary to get it, he gets it himself.
Yes.
Like that, because it's affection.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
Okay. Arjuna continued. Right. In other words, this power is being presented, but they may not catch it. So Krishna makes it obvious, his power.
Mm.
And then because it's obvious, then they lose their enthusiasm. But otherwise, that prowess and power is there in so many things. But he does it personally.
Mm.
Arjuna continued, great warriors like Bhishma, Drona, it's Karna?
Yeah.
Karna. Buri Shrava, Shusharma, Shalya, Jayadratha, and Bahlika released their invincible weapons at me during the battle at Kurukshetra. But by Krishna's grace, they could not harm me. 16. In his purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada details the deeds and fates of four figures of prominence in the Mahabharata, namely Karna, Napta, or Buri Shrava, Trigartha, or Shusharma. Oh, okay. That's the Trigartas. And Jayadratha. Oh, okay. So it's just like you have Drupad, but they're the Panchalas. Right? So then Shusharma, then they're the Trigartas. That's his kingdom. Okay. Because remember, the Trigartas or who attacked at, what's that place? When they were in hiding. You know, so the Trigartas attacked from one side, and so then the king and his whole army went out. And then at the same time, the Kauravas then attacked from the other side. So then all that was left was Uttam and his, how do you say, eunuch mentor. Yes. Okay. Karna, born of Kunti by the sun god prior to her marriage with Maharaj Pandu. Karna took his birth with bangles and earrings, extraordinary signs for an undaunted hero. In the beginning, his name was Vasusena, but when he grew up, he presented his natural bangles and earrings to Indra, and henceforth he became known as Vaikartana. After his birth from the maiden Kunti, he was thrown in the Ganga. Later, he was picked up by Adirata, and he and his wife Radha brought him up as their own offspring. Karna was very charitable, especially towards the Brahmanas. There was nothing he would not spare for a Brahmana. In the same charitable spirit, he gave in charity his natural bangles and earrings to Indradev, who, being very much satisfied with him, gave him in return a great weapon called Shakti. He was admitted as one of the students of Dronacharya, and from the very beginning there was some rivalry between him and Arjuna. Seeing his constant rivalry with Arjuna, Duryodhana picked him up as his companion, and this gradually grew into greater intimacy. He was also present in the great assembly of Draupadi Swayamvar function, and when he attempted to exhibit his talent at that meeting, Draupadi's brother declared that Karna could not take part in the competition because of his being the son of a Shudra carpenter. Although he was refused in the competition, still, when Arjuna was successful in piercing the fish target on the ceiling, and Draupadi bestowed her garland upon Arjuna, Karna and the other disappointed princes offered an unusual stumbling block to Arjuna. While he was leaving with Draupadi. Right? Because generally it's that if in the Swayamvar, then a prince takes up the Rakshasa marriage program, then there's a fight. But here he won fair and square. There should have been no fight at all. It's against the codes, technically. Otherwise, what's the meaning of having, you know, the whole fair? Then otherwise they can just come in and have a brawl, and whoever's left standing, then the girl can come out with the garland, right? But here it's that, you know, they have codes. You know, that was their point. The Brahmins shouldn't have taken part and things like this. So it was, you know, as Prabhupada said, unusual. It normally wouldn't happen like this. But then, this wasn't an ordinary, you know, Swayamvar. You know, as we mentioned, Draupadi was their girl on the planet that everyone wanted to marry. You know? So it was, yeah. They were very enthusiastic. Specifically, Karna fought with him very valiantly. But all of them were defeated by Arjuna. Duryodhana was very much pleased with Karna because of his constant rivalry with Arjuna. And when he was in power, he enthroned Karna in the state of Anga. Being baffled in his attempt to win Draupadi, Karna advised Duryodhana to attack King Drupad. For after defeating him, both Arjuna and Draupadi could be arrested. But Dronacharya rebuked them for this conspiracy, and they refrained from the action. Right? Karna was defeated many times, not only by Arjuna, but also by Bhimasena. He was the king of the kingdom of Bengal, Orissa, and Madras combined. So that's Anga. Right? Sometimes it's said he's there because they were all connected before. Just like you see the time of Lord Chaitanya, Ramananda Rai, he was governor for Madras, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, on behalf of Maharaj Prataparudra. Yes. So it was connected with Orissa, and Orissa and Bengal. There, it was all Bengal, Orissa, and Madras. That was all considered one kingdom before. Mm-hmm. So that then Karna was the king of that. So that's Anga. Mm-hmm. Later on, he took an active part in the Rajasuya sacrifice of Maharaj Yudhishthira. And when there was gambling between the rival brothers, designed by Shakuni, Karna took part in the game. And he was very pleased when Draupadi was offered as a bet in the gambling. This fed his old grudge. When Draupadi was in the game, he was very enthusiastic to declare the news that it is he who ordered Dushasana to take away the garments of both the Pandavas and Draupadi. He asked Draupadi to select another husband because of being lost by the Pandavas. She was rendered a slave for the Kurus, right? According to Manu. So this is all just due to his vengeful nature. Because according to Manu, it doesn't matter what happens. Even slavery, a husband and wife are never separated. Right? Even if they become slaves, it's not that the girl's not free to become connected with someone else. She's still connected with her husband. So they were just here behaving, you know, out of just enmity. Right? There wasn't any dharma here. That's why then all this is adding up and it's reducing their lifespan, reducing their ability and everything. Just like Karna, already his ability is great as long as he's not in danger. If he's in actual danger, then he can't use it. Right? So then, you know, he'll be able to show a lot. It'll work well for him for his position and all that, but in actual need, he can't use it. That was already the curse of his guru because he had cheated in getting like that. So you put all these together. So Krishna knew all these things, so he just brings them all together at once so you can have a really good show. You know? Like that. And they didn't even need a bubble machine. Right? It worked out great. You know? Yeah. He was always an enemy of the Pandavas, and whenever there was an opportunity, he tried to curb them by all means. During the Battle of Kurukshetra, he foresaw the conclusive result, and he expressed his opinion that due to Lord Krishna's being the chariot driver of Arjuna, the battle should be won by Arjuna. He always differed with Bhishma. And sometimes he was proud enough to say that within 5 days he could finish up the Pandavas. Right? I guess one a day, right? Otherwise one five. Right? So it means, so this is where the intelligence is lost, their pride takes over. Right? Because when the pride is there, then you can't see things properly. Right? So that's always the thing, is that people, you have all the different qualities, bad qualities get in the way of behavior. But yes. Ultimately, the final one to get in the way, even if you get rid of all them, is pride.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. So then, what? So the materialists are always defeated; they're never successful. Right.
Yes.
Ultimately, they may be for some time, but then it runs out. You know? Otherwise, how would you keep everybody busy if someone wasn't winning? Then, because unless someone wins, no one will be inspired. And then everyone will just be sitting around, and that would be pretty useless. Right?
So pride is the last thing to go.
Yes, right, the last thing to do. So that's why then this thing of the first thing we deal with, I'm servant of Krishna. Because that's the actual identity. That gets rid of the pride.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to ask what gets rid of the pride.
Okay. Yeah. So it's identifying as servant of Krishna. Because the pride comes from I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's the original pride.
Yes.
Then you have the specific pride of, you know, whatever particular body you're in that, yes, I'm, let's say, strong, or I'm intelligent, or I have this physical ability, or I have this mental ability, or does that make sense? Those are details. They change life to life. Someone's an artist in this life, you know, they're a good administrator in the next life, whatever it is. Those are temporary things that they become immediately proud about, but ultimately the pride is I'm the controller and enjoyer no matter what it is.
What gets rid of if you think I'm so special because Krishna has bestowed these amazing qualities on me and not other people?
But the point is who bestowed them?
Krishna.
Yes, so that's out of his causeless mercy.
Okay, it's not out of his favor?
But his favor is still his causeless mercy. You know what I'm saying? In other words, we're extremely small, right? You know, we're basically, you could say, the opposite of unlimited.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like that. Smaller than that is kind of beyond our capacity to appreciate. Right? So,
thank you.
Therefore, it's out of the affection that he's bestowing these things. You know what I'm saying? So it's part of the interaction and affection. It's not that one needs to. You know, he has to. Like that. But because of affection, he does.
I guess that's what the gopis got right.
Yes, and so then it doesn't work, because Krishna's not proud of his ability. So then if you're proud of the natural reciprocal aspect of that, then how do you have a relationship? Right? In other words, if two parties, one's proud, then how do you interact? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's all I'm saying. I guess you could say, if you become proud, how is that service?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's not pleasing to Krishna, so how is that a benefit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Would you say that when one advances in devotional service, they're able to recognize the more subtle levels of pride?
Yes, that's not true. Because as you become purified, then the intelligence becomes finer. You can catch these things. That's the meaning of the finer brain tissues. These fine elements you can perceive. Otherwise, nowadays, the intelligence is being cultivated just for mechanics. You know, there's some mechanical skill. And so that is all the focus on. Occupational training is only that, how to deal with the mechanics. So the element of the subtle things of character, you know, and then of self-realization and all these things, those aren't cultivated at all. They're not seen as important. So then the difficulty comes is that you're limited to a very low level of this technical skill. Does that make sense?
So, with devotional service and becoming more humble and tolerant, that can assist in developing the finer brain tissues to perhaps assist with our activity?
It means all of it goes together. It means the finer brain tissues means you can see things in relationship to the Lord, because that's what's going on. See, the mechanics are just the visible elements of how Krishna's nature works. Does that make sense? The mechanics are already there, just people become aware of them. Right? So then, becoming aware, then you can work within that, the context of that particular manifestation of potencies. Right? So it's already going on. Now, the point is that's still Krishna. It's still his potency. It's his laws. The mechanics are his laws. Just because we've observed them doesn't make them ours. Otherwise, if that's how things work, then it would be difficult. Everyone would be rich. Nobody would be rich. You know, you just see the car as your car, you know, and then you get it, and the next guy sees it as his. You know, I mean, how does this work? You know? You know, so that's the whole thing, is because there's seemingly no one to complain. Then you know, it goes on like that. But otherwise, then just one's observed what's already existent. It's not that it's different. That you observe that koala bears eat eucalyptus leaves. It's not that now, because you've observed it, that's why they're eating eucalyptus leaves. You know what I'm saying? We don't create the science, we only observe science. So man doesn't create science, it's already there. You know, that's this thing. It's, oh, we're scientists, so we're... No, you're not creating anything, you're taking part in what's already existing. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the...
So it's like connected with... For example, the finer brain tissues being obviously the intelligence. So devotees are intelligent, and as they advance more, they would make them more intelligent.
Yes. But it's not necessarily that they'll become more intelligent in the mechanical skills. The finer brain teachers are what's behind that. They may, by Krishna's grace, they may. But it's not necessarily that that's what's developing. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, the man, he's running his business, he's doing quite well. And one of the things of running his business, why he's, you know, seemingly successful, is he doesn't allow anything to get in the way. And he takes every opportunity to further his business. Okay, so on one level, sounds quite good. You know, he's got determination, he's got focus, he's stable, he's steady, he's active. You know, he's not lazy. You know, he takes the opportunity. But after some time, let's say by, you know, proper association, then he starts to notice that those opportunities, you know, that we would call business opportunities for himself, are a loss for someone else. You know, he gained by, he got that extra contract over the holidays by ruining someone else's family life. Because they, you know, every time they make an arrangement that they're going to be there with the family, then something comes up that they have to be doing something for the job. Right? And so people lose there. Or, you know, so he notices that his wonderful qualities of taking advantage of everything and being determined are at the expense of others. That's a little bit finer brain tissue. It's not that it changes mechanics, it changes what you're aware of. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, of course, there's going to be something because everybody's in there, but the idea of the Vedic system is that there's a balance. In other words, no one's going to get 100%. But it should be everybody gets the maximum percentage they can get in that situation. So when we try to take 100%, that means we're taking someone else's. Right? Because the normal thing in a relationship is 50-50. So we get our 50%, they get their 50%. Right? It works out. You know what I'm saying? Yes? It does. So that's the... Yes?
Do you need some ignorance to be a good Vaishya?
Do you need some ignorance to be a good Vaishya? Basically, you need some ignorance to be good at anything in the material world, on the material platform. You know? Like that. It's just... It's, ignorance is required. It's a natural state of existence. But the more knowledge one has and the more character one has, then you can function at a much better level. Like you'll generally see the difference, let's say, between a small businessman and a very big businessman is a certain degree of character, at least in the areas necessary for business. Right? In other words, the smaller businessman then... he doesn't contemplate that much, or he doesn't apply that much, or...
Contemplates too much?
Yeah, contemplates too much, gets an anxiety, can't control the mind when it comes to actual application, worrying about the future when he should worry about the present. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is to be focused on the present and only on the present takes a lot of intelligence and commitment and character to do. Because you can't be worried about your profit. You have to be worried about the mechanics that generate it. So you generally will see that socially on certain levels that the people who are very, very wealthy in the very high ranks of society, they have a level of character that the common person doesn't have. The common person generally scoffs at it, that it's a lack of character. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, they're so, impersonal, or it's so superficial. Yes. Going, huh?
Or arrogant.
Yeah, arrogant. But the point is how much tolerance does it take in character to sit at one of those $1,000 a plate dinners when you know that they're there just to take your money? And everybody's there smiling, behaving nicely, acting with all the etiquettes. It may be superficial on that level, but it takes a lot of character to be able to function in that. The common man says, we wouldn't want to do that. But factually, they can't do that. They couldn't sit there. They would not be able to. You know, the food goes down on the table, they want to eat it. In fact, as soon as it's put on the table, they want to get it out of and start eating. They sit there and wait, and people sit there and bang, you know, ding on in a glasses and lift them up and say this and that. And so that takes so much. You know, you just want to eat. It's a whole different realm. I dumped in this. We went to when we were in Finland. There was this one. I can't remember what he is. I think he is a lawyer. And he would do, you know, I think he still does, but before he would do things for the society in the much earlier days. But he was one of those real old school, you know, the guys, you know, that got medals for this and that. And, you know, it's like, I give an example. We were going to go visit his house after lunch. And so, because they live in a compound, so every house, every block of flats in that, you know, has their own little governance, and they all have a flagpole, right? And then for special occasions, the flag is raised, you know, for government holidays or, you know, somebody dies or, you know, something. So it's actually, you have to get it approved by the housing council. So I was coming to visit. He got it approved that they could raise the flag because I was a special personality that was visiting. Like that. So he's that kind of person. So when you come there, there's dinner, it's all in the courses, and in between he's standing up and making speeches and doing this whole thing. Like, wow, this is amazing. So then now I can understand how they get by with eating so little, because all this time is spent between and you just lose your appetite. So, but it was very amazing on how much control he had.
Did he raise a toast?
Yeah, no, he did it many times. And when he does it, he stands up. It's not just, you know, you say something and all that, you know, which is kind of like having fun. It's formal, and he's giving this whole kind of thing, you know, it's like very, very formal, like that. So it's amazing. So to, you know, eat what you could probably eat in about 3 minutes, you know, takes about, you know, 45 minutes, you know, and yet everything between them, they take it away, they bring new things, and then the thing comes, and they serve, and it's a whole, you know. So you actually have to have a lot of character to be able to go through that. And so for these people on that level of society, for them, that's normal. That's just standard. But now, as far as they're being greedy and other things, they may have more than, let's say, a common person. Or at least they have opportunity to get, so it you know, it comes out. Because generally, if you take the common person, put him in the same position, he acts just as badly. You know. So the whole point is that to be successful, there has to be character.
Yes.
So we see is that the character that these personalities have is so much greater that they could do much greater things, but still, it's not enough. Even the qualities of Drona and Bhishma and other, it's not enough because it's not devotional. So therefore they fail. Like that. So ultimately that's the finer point, is that one has to maintain oneself according to one's nature, but one does it in such a way that it will create the least amount of disturbance. You know, in other words, how do you get the maximum benefit with the least amount of disturbance? You know, there's not, it's not saying, oh, we don't do this. Because the point is business means what they're, like it says, half truth, half lie. And that you can't be a businessman that's, you know,
either. Completely honest.
You can't be. Because, why? Because the people you're selling to aren't completely honest. Right? In other words, the people you're selling to are completely honest, then you could do it. Right? In other words, you want something, I've made the endeavor to arrange it, therefore you have to pay me for doing it. You know, and they'll go, okay, how much did it cost you? Cost me $100 to arrange and everything like that. Okay, so then 20% markup, I'll give you 120. And that's fair, but who's going to do that? Right? Everybody's looking for the deal that, you know, they know it costs this much, but, you know, it costs 500, I'm getting it for 100. What does that mean? Somebody's got to be losing money here. But people are very happy.
Yes.
You know, it's like what's a comment one devotee was making. He was from the East Bloc, from the Soviet time. You know, so he grew up at that. So when he came to Mayapur, and he was in Mayapur, and then, you know, just been there, I asked him, so how do you like it in Mayapur? He says, I'm as happy as if I've just stolen something from the government. you know. And so I'm saying, well, okay, so how happy is that? You know, and he's saying, you know, from the East Block, he says, that's happy. You don't get happy over that. You know, so that was a, that was the point. So,
yes.
Yes. This one. Okay, so here Karna understands that due to the, even just due to the two things. One is Krishna's the Supreme Lord. So that's definitely going to be on Arjuna's side. But here he's the best chariot driver. He knows where to go. He knows what to do. He sees the opportunities. He's not just like a good chariot driver. You tell him to go, he does it. But this is, he sees opportunities. You know, because he's right there in the front. He'll see them first, yes.
He creates the opportunities.
Yeah, creates the opportunities, yeah. So then, you mean as Krishna, yeah. Right? Saying, yeah, here. So that's why I was saying on Shalya, then he's as technically as competent a chariot driver, you know, in the skills. But of course, Krishna will be beyond. But so he's seeing opportunities, but Karna can't appreciate that, so he can't take advantage because Krishna's, you know, he doesn't have the intelligence. Therefore, he insults Shalya, which he shouldn't have. He should have just allowed Shalya to take him wherever he saw was his best opportunity for fight, right? And then he would have been successful. But he can't. Like that. And so Krishna, Arjuna has the same position, so Karna can understand he's going to win. So that's why then he worked it out that Shalya would be his chariot driver. Mm-hmm. Like that. But he didn't have the character to function in that way. Right here, Arjuna has the Supreme Lord as his chariot driver, but he's not dealing badly. You know, Karna has a very great king as a chariot driver, much less difference, but he can't behave properly. Right? You know, so that's the difference. The devotees can. Okay. Oh, he always differed with Bhishma, and sometimes he was proud. He enough to say that within 5 days he could finish up the Pandavas if Bhishma would not interfere with his plan of action. But he was much mortified when Bhishma died. He killed Ghatotkacha with the Shakti weapon obtained from Indradev. His son, Vrishasena, was killed by Arjuna. He killed the largest number of Pandava soldiers. At last, there was a severe fight with Arjuna, and it was he only who was able to knock off the helmet of Arjuna. But it so happened that the wheel of his chariot stuck in the battlefield mud. And when he got down to set the wheel right, Arjuna took the opportunity and killed him, although he requested Arjuna not to do so. Mm-hmm. Napta, because the point was, is he wasn't behaving properly before. So then in the reciprocation of that, therefore, he was killed because it was Krishna wanted it to be that way. Yes.
How do they talk to each other when they're in battle?
You mean, do they have like bullhorns, or they use walkie-talkies?
No, but
they
kind of got off his chariot to fix it, and he requested Arjuna not to kill him. I guess when he got off. So
you're talking about humans here.
I don't understand.
Humans, then battle is an engagement or a relationship between two individuals, and so therefore you follow rules so that the relationship will go proper, because it's a rasa of chivalry, right? Now, naturally, in this is a very high stake relationship, because generally speaking, one ends up dead. Right, you know, but the point is the nature of the kshatriya. That's, you know, fair game. You know, they're comfortable with that. You know, so then, therefore, then there may be opportunity to discuss and all that.
Okay.
So then, in other words, you would relate more with a triad than a mafia.
Mm-hmm.
Mafia, they'll come and talk to you and tell you it's not good for your health.
I'm a mafia.
Yeah, so triad, they don't. They just shoot you. They don't bother. Okay, you know, it means the personal element is not important for them. Winning is. So, but the mafia, it's more of, it, you know, it, winning, but, you know, we're people. Like that. So you don't bother us, we don't bother you. You know, triad works more on niti. So therefore, if you could ever at any time be a problem, then they will remove the problem. You understand? So does that make sense? Yeah. So, in other words, the more the character, we see if we go back, the, you know, more contemporary kind of thing, just anybody who's there, then they just, you know, kill each other. But you go back in time, people like to explain why they were going to kill you. You know, because there was a personal element there. You know, nowadays they don't bother, you know.
Send in the drones.
Send in the drones. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it takes on more and more this impersonal kind of thing. But before it was all about the personal. So then there may be discussion. And anyways, the discussion enhances the chivalry anyway. You know?
For now?
Yes.
Karnai was not fighting from the beginning of the Battle of Kurukshetra.
Don't know, because he said as long as Bhishma was on the battlefield, he wouldn't. So it was one or the other had to be on the battlefield. So then Bhishma was the senior, so naturally he was there. So only after Bhishma fell, then Karna went on. Like that. And so then he wasn't there long. It was in the very end of the battle.
Yes.
Like that. I think the last few days.
Mm-hmm. And he came many, many ago.
Yes. No, he did the most. Bhishma could have, but he didn't. He just said, I'll kill 10,000 a day.
He made his quota.
Yeah, he made his quota. Yeah, like that. You know, so that's all he said. That's all he's going to do. 10,000 meant 10,000 warriors. So the warrior comes with his foot soldiers and cavalry and everything. So, you know, it's a lot more than 10,000. That's all he was going to do. But we see Abhimanyu, he got rid of one Akshahini in one morning. Yeah. Like that. So it's, you had some great, great fighters. So Karna killed the most. Okay, Napta. Or Bhurishrava. Bhurishrava was the son of Somadatta, a member of the Kuru family. His other brother was Shalya. Both the brothers and the father attended the Swayamvar ceremony of Draupadi. All of them appreciated the wonderful strength of Arjuna due to his being the devotee friend of the Lord, and thus Bhurishrava advised the sons of Dhritarashtra not to pick any quarrel or fight with them. All of them also attended the Rajasuya Yajna of Maharaj Yudhishthira. He possessed one Akshahini regiment of army, cavalry, elephants, and chariots. All these were employed in the Battle of Kurukshetra on behalf of Duryodhana's party. He was counted by Bhima as one of the Yutapatis. Okay. In the Battle of Kurukshetra, he was especially engaged in a fight with Satyaki, and he killed 10 sons of Satyaki. Later on, Arjuna cut off his hands, and he was ultimately killed by Satyaki. After his death, he merged into the existence of Vishwadeva. Okay, so he's... So he may be the one that was sitting down and then Satyaki killed him and then... what's his name? Kritavarma. Then mentioned that it wasn't fair, and that's what started the whole fight that destroyed the Yadu dynasty. Like that. I think it was over this particular incident. Trigartha, or Shusharma, son of Maharaj Vrida Kshetra, was the king of Trigartha Desh, and he was also present in the Swayamvar ceremony of Draupadi. He was one of the allies of Duryodhana, and he advised Duryodhana to attack the Matsya Desh Darbhanga. During the time of cow stealing in the Virat Nagar, he was able to arrest Maharaj Virat, but later Maharaj Virat was released by Bhima. In the battle of Kurukshetra, he also fought very valiantly, but at the end he was killed by Arjuna. Jayadratha, another son of Maharaj Dhritashekra, he was the king of Sindhu Desh, modern Sindh, Pakistan. His wife's name was Dushala. He was also present in the Swayamvar ceremony of Draupadi, and he had desired very strongly to have her hand, but he failed in the competition. But since then, he always sought the opportunity to get in touch with Draupadi. When he was going to marry in the Shalya Desh, on the way to Kamyavan, he happened to see Draupadi again, and he was too much attracted to her. The Pandavas and Draupadi were then in exile, after losing their empire in gambling, and Jayadratha thought it wise to send news to Draupadi in an illicit manner through Kotishasya, one of his associates. Draupadi at once refused vehemently the proposal of Jayadratha, but being so much attracted by the beauty of Draupadi, he tried again and again. Every time he was refused by Draupadi, he tried to take her away forcibly on his chariot, and at first Draupadi gave him a good dashing. And he felt like a cut root tree. In other words, just by emotions, he just emotionally just destroys him. Yeah. But he was not discouraged. Determination. So that's the whole point, is all these qualities in the material world are relative. Yes. You know, one thing you can say is very determined, on another you can say he's, you know. In other words, if you say, you know, yes, he would sacrifice the whole world to, you know, save his family, we would say that's a good thing. But now if he actually did sacrifice the world, then we would say that's not so good. You know? Yeah, so that's the whole point. But he was not discouraged, and he was able to force Draupadi to sit on the chariot. This incident was seen by Domya Muni, and he strongly protested the action of Jayadratha. He also followed the chariot and threw Dattreyika. The matter was brought to the notice of Maharaj Yudhishthira. The Pandavas then attacked the soldiers of Jayadratha and killed them all. And at last, Bhima caught hold of Jayadratha and beat him very severely, almost dead. Then all but five hairs were cut off his head, and he was taken to all the kings and introduced as the slave of Maharaj Yudhishthira. I guess five hairs, one for each Pandava. I wonder if they're all in one place.
Or a reminder. Yeah.
You never know. He was forced to admit himself to be the slave of Maharaj Yudhishthira before all the princely order. And in the same condition, he was brought before Maharaj Yudhishthira. Maharaj Yudhishthira was kind enough to order him released. And when he admitted to being a tributary prince under Maharaj Yudhishthira, Queen Draupadi also desired his release. After this incident, he was allowed to return to his country. Being so insulted, he went to Gangotri in the Himalayas and undertook a severe type of penance to please Lord Shiva. He asked his benediction to feed all the Pandavas, at least one at a time. Then the battle of Kurukshetra began. He took sides with Duryodhana. In the first day's fight, he was engaged with Maharaj Drupada, then with Virata, and then with Abhimanyu. While Abhimanyu was being killed mercilessly, surrounded by seven great generals, the Pandavas came to his help, but Jayadratha, by the mercy of Lord Shiva, repulsed them with his great ability. At this, Arjuna took a vow to kill him. And on hearing this, Jayadratha wanted to leave the war field and asked permission from the Kauravas for this cowardly action. But he was not allowed to do so. On the contrary, he was obliged to fight with Arjuna. And while the fight was going on, Lord Krishna reminded Arjuna that the benediction of Lord Shiva upon Jayadratha was that whoever would cause his head to fall on the ground would die at once. He therefore advised Arjuna to throw the head of Jayadratha directly into the lap of his father. who was engaged in penances at the Samanta Panchaka pilgrimage. This was actually done by Arjuna. Jayadratha's father was surprised to see a severed head on his lap, and he at once threw it to the ground. The father immediately died, his forehead being cracked in 7 pieces.
Took care of that.
Yeah. So always be a little careful next time. A head. When you're meditating on Samanta Panchaka and a head falls in your lap, then be careful. Don't put it on the ground, put it on something.
Can you hold this?
It was by his mercy only that my enemies neglected to kill me when I descended from my chariot to get water for my thirsty horses. And it was due to my lack of esteem for my lord that I dared engage him as my chariot driver. Because there was a time they're going in the battle, this whole point with Jayadratha, and the horses were tired and needed to be watered, so they stopped, and Krishna created this whole lake and everything, and nice. So they let the horses out and let them, you know, relax for some time and everything like that, right in the middle of the battlefield. But the enemies didn't come and disturb them. So that was by Krishna's grace.
Nice.
Okay. And it was due to my lack of esteem for my lord that I dared engage him as my chariot driver, for he is worshipped and offered services by the best of men to attain salvation. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, remembering Krishna's powers in separation, Arjuna's Dasya Bhava appeared. This caused his natural Shakya Bhava to recede. Thus, Arjuna sees that he was offensive to engage Krishna as his charioteer and expresses regret in this verse. Quote, great souls worship him for liberation. This individual, myself, with ego, did not worship him. But listen to the mercy he showed me, who am such an offender. My horses were tired from lack of water when killing Jayadratha. I got down from the chariot and, piercing the ground, produced water. At that time, the enemies could not attack me because by his influence, their minds lost concentration. So they wouldn't be able to focus. They might even see, but they don't focus and they'll get distracted by something else and go fight somewhere else. You know? So it's not that they couldn't see him, but it's just they couldn't focus to actually take up a fight. Yeah, so if you change the mood, then the mood changes, so it goes into Dasya here. But at the same time, is then he's showing but as his friend, and this is what he did. So he was, you know, very much absorbed in this mood. You know, it's his natural mood. O King, Lord Krishna used to decorate his pleasant joking and frank talks with me with beautiful smiles that, as I now remember them, rent my heart. I am stunned to recall his addressing me as O son of Prita, O friend, and O son of the Kuru dynasty. We used to eat and sleep together, and we would simply pass our leisure time enjoying life together. Right? In other words, there wasn't anything specific to do. They just enjoyed being together. Right. This is the symbol of friendship. In other words, the eating, the resting, the talking, that was adding to the Shakya Bhava. Not that that was all that you could do. If you weren't doing that, there would be no relationship. Right. That's why we saw in the second verse, the Bhagavatam, that it made the point that basically in the material world, people don't taste the primary rasas. Right? It means they're in the position of them. Like you have friends, but generally if there's not a third activity or a third, that what's to do?
Call it the common third.
Yes. So, you know, they have to go do something or something have to be there. You know, play a video game together, you know, like that. You know, because you're sitting on the same couch and you're doing something together. You know?
Yeah.
So, but here is they could just sit and interact. The friendship relationship is such that they could just interact. Then you can add these other things to it to create, you know, what we say, visesha, or the specialness, the uniqueness, the difference. Right? It's still the same rasa, but it's all the difference that comes up right? But in the modern, it's only the difference that is supposedly the relation. There is technically no same. The same is that you're both experiencing the same difference. You know what I'm saying? So it's very weak. Sometimes as we would brag about our respective prowess, if Krishna would exaggerate, I would reproach him by sarcastically saying, "My friend, you are speaking very truthfully." Right? So even Krishna, even though he could do anything he said, he would exaggerate what actually happened just for the fun of, you know, because they're equal friends. So equal friends always has that little touch of the chivalry. So it's very close, but at the same time, as you can, that's part of the rasa. You can talk about how, you know, I did this, but you only did that, you know. And then Arjuna will say, "Yes, you're speaking so truthfully." Due to the intimacy of our relationship, the Lord would always excuse these utterances that minimized his value, just as a true friend forgives his friend. Footnote 5. Bhagavad Gita 11:41-42, Arjuna spoke in a similar way. Thinking of you as my friend, I have rashly addressed you, O Krishna, O Yadava, O my friend, not knowing your glories. Why, O Yadava? Because Yadavas are junior to the Kauravas. So by saying, O Yadava, you know, then he's naturally just it's taking the position and putting lower. You know, so that's the... Not knowing your glories, please forgive whatever I may have done in madness or in love. I have dishonored you many times, jesting as we relaxed, lay on the same bed, or sat or ate together, sometimes alone and sometimes in front of many friends. So it's one thing they're alone, but then in front of others, then he's doing this. Oh, infallible one, please excuse me for all those offenses. Right, so because friends, because it technically is an offense, but because friends, you don't take it. You know, we also saw in that one. I don't remember which king. One of the kings was talking about, in the same principle, his wife. Even though the joking words, sometimes he was insulted, she wouldn't get upset like that out of affection. I don't remember the king. But, as I recollect these intimacies, I find myself overwhelmed by grief. Due to separation from Sri Krishna, my heart feels void. In his absence, my Kshatriya powers, once unmatched in this world, are slackened. I was even defeated by a band of cowherd dacoits while escorting his queens from Dwarka to Hastinapur.
cowherd dacoits, yeah.
A band of cowherd dacoits. Right? So it's not an army, it's just a band, right? The real reason for Arjuna's defeat is revealed in the purport of verse 20. In the Vishnu Purana and the Brahma Purana, it is stated that once the fair damsels of heaven pleased Ashtavakra Muni by their service. The sage blessed the women that the Supreme Lord would become their husband. Ashtavakra's body, being curved in 8 places, obliged him to walk in a very peculiar manner. When these same women who had been blessed by him saw his manner of movement, they could not check their foolish laughter. Prabhupada mentioned that young girls, they laugh at anything. That's one of their notable qualities, you know. The angered Muni cursed them to be kidnapped by rogues, even while they would be wives of the Supreme Lord. The remorseful girls managed to pacify Ashtavakra, however, so he blessed them by saying that they would once again regain their husband after being kidnapped. So, as to keep Ashtavakra's words intact, Lord Krishna personally became the dacoits and kidnapped his own wives. Otherwise, if real rogues had touched Krishna's wives, the ladies would have immediately vanished from the scene. Right, because they're technically internal potencies, so then they wouldn't have been able to be touched. Or they would have remained, but then those forms would have been Maya forms, just like Sita. She left this Maya form, but the real Sita is not. Besides that, Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, some of the gopis who prayed to become wives of the Lord returned to their respective positions after their desire was fulfilled. After the departure of Lord Krishna, he wanted all his entourage back to Godhead, and they were called back under different conditions only. Thus, after the Lord's departure, one way or another, Krishna's eternal associates all returned to the spiritual world. So some, you know, Kitna then went back to Braj, others went, you know, whatever their position, they went back to. I am the same Arjuna, and I was using the same chariot, drawn by the same horses, and I wielded the same Gandiva bow and arrows. However, in the absence of Lord Krishna, all of these became null and void. It is exactly like offering clarified butter on ashes, accumulating money with a magic wand, or sowing seeds on barren land. So then that means all the money generated by the magic wand is not actually real. It's been confirmed. Okay. 21. In his purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada emphasized that even the greatest achievements of modern civilization are worthless without connection with the Lord. Material civilization without the blessings of the Lord is child's play only. As long as the parents allow the child to play, it is all right. As soon as the parents withdraw, the child has to stop. Human civilization and all activities thereof must be dovetailed with the supreme blessing of the Lord. Without his blessing, all advancement of human civilization is like decoration on a dead body. It is said here that a dead civilization and its activities are something like clarified butter on ashes. The accumulation of money by a magic wand and the sowing of seeds in a barren land. So even you see something nice or useful or seemingly beneficial in the modern society, the point is even though, because it says ghee on ashes, right? So the ghee is a value, the ashes are not. Because when you pour it on ashes, that's not firing, it's not part of the offering, right? It means it has to be in the flame. You know, on the wood, on the coals, like that. But in ash, then there's nothing there. There's no fire. Where's the offering? So, therefore, they may have so many nice qualities, nice things, but it's an offering into ashes because they're going to use it for materialistic purposes, not for God consciousness. So one may be able to observe some good qualities or some good action within the materialistic society, but its effect doesn't give any benefit. You're saying the soul will not be benefited. All that will do is create a nicer or not as nice body and situation in the next life. That's all. But it won't do anything for the soul, so it's a waste. You can say, oh, it's developing so nicely, you have so much facility, but who's getting that facility? The body, not the soul. Right? So that's the difference. The Vedic is the body should get facility, but the soul should also. So the focus is on the soul. Because when the soul leaves the body really doesn't care about the facilities. You know, you get him some simple box, you know, like that. I'm not staying in this kind of thing. I want one of those nice polished oak ones, you know, like that. You know, the nice handles on the side, and, you know, like that. You know, and what do you mean? You're dead. You know? What are you worried about? He says, yes, I may be dead, but I still have my dignity. You know, so the point is the body doesn't care. The soul cares, but the benefit goes to the body, not the soul. So that's the problem. The soul thinks he's the body, so you seemingly get the benefit, but the soul doesn't get the benefit, and the body who gets the benefit doesn't care. You know, it's one thing, you know, what would you say if you gave something very valuable to somebody and they didn't care? You'd think it's a waste. So you're giving all this nice stuff to the body, and the body doesn't care. So it's actually a waste. Like that. Huh? All that trouble. In the next six verses, 22 to 26, Arjuna answers the first part of question 20 asked by Maharaj Yudhishthira in the previous chapter regarding the welfare of the Yadu dynasty. O king, as for the male residents of Dwarka, I must inform you that they were cursed by the Brahmanas, and as a result, they became mad with intoxication by drinking rice wine. A fight broke out amongst themselves with deadly results. Not only four or five of the Yadus remain alive. I know that this is all due to the will of the Supreme Lord, just as bigger aquatics swallow the smaller ones. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to lighten the burden of the earth, engaged the stronger Yadus in killing the weaker ones. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the real cause of the destruction of the Yadus. The destruction of the Yadu family was the will of the Lord, according to common vision. But this is not the real fact, the real truth, because among themselves, living beings are the cause of destroying and protecting each other. It is said there that the Lord destroyed the Yadus who became a burden on the earth. This perception was created by the Lord for Arjuna and others. The cause is explained at the end of the 11th canto. Arjuna here says that Yadus became a burden on the earth, but actually they were the ornaments for the earth. That is because the Yadus were eternal associates of the Lord. Just as a woman does not feel that her ornaments are a weight, so the earth did not feel the weight of the Yadus. Even the Devatas who appeared in the Yadu family cannot be said to be a burden, since they were also without Rajas and Tamas. Therefore, the destruction was a means of having the Devatas and the Eternal Associates return to their appropriate destinations. That is, it's given that as a burden on the earth, because you have these powerful personalities. Now what are they going to do? So it appears that way, but actually it's just so they can go back to their natural positions. You know, the pastime's over, so then everybody, you know, yeah. They said, it is a road show, so yes. It's on. Verses 27-51. Arjuna remembers Krishna's instructions and the Pandavas return to the spiritual world. Okay. In the first verse of this section, Arjuna gives the most essential response to the question 20 asked by Maharaj Yudhishthira in the beginning of the previous chapter. Or is it that you are feeling empty? Empty for all time because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna. Oh, my brother Arjuna, I can think of no other reason for your becoming so dejected. Arjuna said, my dear brother, now my only wish is to take shelter of those instructions that Lord Krishna personally imparted to me. For I know that they are the only means to get relief from the flaming emotions that consume my troubled heart. When put in adverse situation, most people tend to respond by hopeful dreaming about future passion, or by despair and intoxication, ignorance. Right, so they are hoping what it will come out to be, or it could be better, or you know, a better world, or all these things. So that's the mode of passion, because it's future. And then when they remember the good times in the past, you know, and despair about that, or get intoxicated, that's the mode of ignorance. So we see that these two come up. Both of them are considered foolish, you know, like that. But of the two, generally it's kind of like, yeah, you get both. Okay. Arjuna's response to the adversity he was facing was to take shelter in the Lord's instructions. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that taking shelter in Krishna's words works, quote, in all critical times, end quote, when all other so-called remedies have failed. His divine grace makes it clear that by those instructions, Arjuna means Bhagavad Gita, spoken by Lord Krishna at the start of the Kurukshetra War. Herein, Arjuna refers to the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, which was imparted to him by the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. The Lord left behind him the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, not for the benefit of Arjuna alone, but also for all time and in all lands. The Bhagavad Gita, being spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic wisdom. The problem which arose in the heart of Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was solved by the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. Again, after the departure of Lord Krishna from the vision of worldly people, when Arjuna was face to face with being vanquished in his acquired power and prominence. He wanted again to remember the great teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, just to teach all concerned that the Bhagavad Gita can be considered in all critical times, not only for solace from all kinds of mental agonies, but also for the way out of great entanglements, which may embarrass one in some critical hour. The merciful Lord left behind him the great teachings of Bhagavad Gita, so that one can take the instructions of the Lord even when he is not visible to material eyesight. Material senses cannot have any estimation of the Supreme Lord. But by his inconceivable power, the Lord can incarnate himself to the sense perception of the conditioned souls in a suitable manner through the agency of matter, which is also another form of the Lord's manifested energy. Thus, the Bhagavad Gita, or any authentic scriptural sound representation of the Lord, is also the incarnation of the Lord. There's no difference between the sound representation of the Lord and the Lord himself, right? So in other words, we're hearing it through sound, which is matter. But the Lord, being his energy, then he incarnates through that in his internal potency. Right? So that's the difference. Is the non-devotees, they speak Gita. So the sound is there of Gita, but it doesn't have the Lord's internal potency. So he hasn't incarnated there. Right? Means he's there as his material energy, but it's not the spiritual energy. But when the teaching is heard in the parampara, then it carries that spiritual potency. That's why even a new person, they've just heard something, they can tell someone else and it can have a spiritual effect. Right? So it's the potency. So we simply become a medium or carrier for this potency. Does that make sense? It's not that we're making the devotees or we're impressing the people. We're simply a medium for that to happen. Does that make sense? So that's the importance. That's why devotees are respected, because they're the medium. And so an advanced devotee, because he's more of a medium. Right? Does that make sense?
More transparent.
Yes. So it's not about that, oh, because they have all good qualities, therefore they can give the transcendental. You know, that maybe they think, oh, he did this, how can he be an advanced devotee? Right? But they're two different things. Right? Because even the person who has not surrendered yet, right, is still on the platform, hasn't come to that element of Shraddha. He's just associating with devotees, may have heard something from that he's contemplating, and tell it to his friend, and his friend becomes the devotee. I've heard about that. That one person contacts the devotees, is going to the program, and he brings his friend. The friend actually becomes a devotee, and the other one, you know, just disappears again. Like that. So how did that work? That's because the potency's there. So now, to take advantage of that, then you have the proper character and everything like that. Right? So the problem with the bad character is the tendency is then you don't think about the Lord. Right? Because if the mind is engaged in breaking the, it means, in other words, the regulative principles, those are brought to the forefront because these are the most distracting from remembering Krishna. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. That's why these are focused on. But other things also, attached to anything, you know, is a distraction. But these, the tendency attached to these things tends to always be over the top. Right? Does that make sense? It's always greater. So, does that make sense? There's no difference between the sound representation of the Lord and the Lord himself. One can derive the same benefit from the Bhagavad Gita as Arjuna did in the personal presence of the Lord, because it carries that potency. So he's incarnated as the book. So we can say it's like this is considered spiritual. It's Bhagavatam. Right? So we won't you know, put it on the ground. We won't touch a foot to it and anything like that. But it's made out of material energy. So the Lord incarnates into this. You know, that's his prowess. He can do that. Because it carries the internal potency. Right? Yeah. The following section of the purport to verse 27 is most illuminating to students of the two greatest works of Bhagavad literature. His Divine Grace expertly summarizes the Gita and leaves no doubt that it teaches in concise form the same knowledge as Srimad Bhagavatam. Quote, in the Bhagavad Gita, five important factors of knowledge. So many times they do more than five important factors of, I forget, have been delineated pertaining to 1, the Supreme Lord, 2, the living entity, 3, nature, 4, time and space, and 5, the process of activity. So then here you get, it means all this will be your sambandha jnana. At the same time, within that, you see you have the first three of your sambandha, then your fifth is your abhideya, then your time and space. That will be, you know, you need that for it to take place. And then the process of activity means the process and its results. Yes. Right? But you have to have a place to do that, and you have to have the time factor to create activity. Yes. Right? Out of these, the Supreme Lord and the living entities are qualitatively one. The difference being between the two has been analyzed as the difference between the whole and the part and parcel. Nature is inert matter, displaying the interaction of three different modes. And eternal time and unlimited space are considered to be beyond the existence of the material nature. Activities of the living being, right, because time is functioning, but matter just is inert. Right? So time is beyond that. So that's why... Why, ego, time, the living entities, that's what's in the glance, right, of Mahavishnu. That then agitates pradhan, you get mahatattva. Right? Because otherwise, how do you get agitation and movement if there's not time? Right? And then the point of why it would be there is because the living entities, they have their desire. Right? Yes?
So is ether also manifested during the pralaya?
Ether.
Yeah, because it says here, unlimited space are considered to be beyond the existence of material nature. So
yes, because there's space outside. So a certain amount of that's here. Like that. You know, it's just like all these universes are within the pores of Mahavishnu, and then they come out and get bigger. Right? And then he enters them, and, you know, then so many things happen. But that space was already there. Time was already there. Right, the jivas, the living, the Lord is already there. The material nature was there. So the only thing that you see happening or not actually is karma. So the manifestation of the material world is temporary, but the material energy itself is eternal. Right, God. So that's why he says that 4 factors are eternal, 1's temporary.
And sound also moved through the ether, so there's a connection between the spiritual and the material in that sense.
Yes, but also that it means you have the spiritual space, but then you have that reflected within the material world, material space. Just like in the spiritual world, you know, they have the Dham. So here you have, you know, but that's your Sandini potency, but here it's made out of earth, which is the grossest manifestation, you know, of the energy. Okay. Activities of the living being are different varieties of aptitudes which can entrap or liberate the living being within and without the material energy. All these subject matters are concisely discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, and later the subject matters are elaborated in the Srimad Bhagavatam for further enlightenment. Out of the 5 subjects, the Supreme Lord, the living entity, nature, time, and space are eternal, but the living entity, nature, and time are under the direction of the Supreme Lord, who is absolute and completely independent of any other control. The Supreme Lord is the supreme control. So we see here we have the 5. Now we've dropped off karma as temporary. So the four that are left then are eternal. Now of these eternal, then 3 of them are subordinate to the Supreme Lord. Right? So you see that's a nice progression. The material activity of the living being is beginningless, but it can be rectified by transferal into the spiritual quality. Thus, it can cease its material qualitative reactions. Both the Lord and the living entity are cognizant, and both have the sense of identification, of being conscious as a living force. But the living being, under the condition of material nature, called Mahatattva, misidentifies himself as being different from the Lord. All right, so we don't identify with the Lord, we identify with material energy. And then when we do try to identify with the Lord, then we say we're exactly the same.
Yes.
So either way, it's bogus.
Yes.
Right? So the whole scheme of Vedic wisdom is targeted at the aim of eradicating such a misconception and thus liberating the living being from the illusion of material identification. Right? So you're trying to switch from the identity with material energy to identity with the spiritual. Mm-hmm. That's the actual sum and substance of what's going on. Mm-hmm. Right? But there's so much elaboration because we may be convinced in one area, but not in another.
Yes. Yes. We get the reactions in another area, and then we move.
Yes, you know, eventually it gets around. It takes a while. Yes?
When it comes to this point here, philosophical point, we have the example of the pandavas in that war, and you were speaking about Jayadratha. Jayadratha was kind of the cause of Abhimanyu's death. And then, let's say the pandavas were just conditional souls. So, what happens then? Then they kind of become angry with Jayadratha. Jayadratha hates them, and then the next life they become enemies again.
No, but why use that as an example?
Because
why not use just regular living entities?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Regular living entities. Because it's kind of a good situation.
No, but then it's a good situation for how to elevate yourself, not for... In other words, you never take them and put them in that light.
Okay.
They're only put in that light as much as is useful to us. So the Lord, by his yoga maya, may put Arjuna or Yudhishthira into seeming illusions so that we may benefit from the activities and knowledge that comes after that. But we don't say like that. Just in karma, one living entity and another, then it goes on however long it goes until somebody quits.
Yes, that's actually my question. How do you come to that point that you kind of quit?
This,
you just give up this enmity.
Yeah, because otherwise what's the point? Because the enmity is there, you can get your justice, but there's every chance that you have to come back next lifetime to get it. So if you're willing to do that, then why not? Because the modes of nature are happy to make the arrangement. You know? But if you want to make an actual solution, then you go back to Godhead, because we're the soul, not the body. Right? That's the point. We identify with the body. Therefore, this person has insulted me. But have they ever insulted the soul? You know, comes up, you know, one person says, "Well, you're only 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. You know, you're transcendental. You're liberated. You're spiritual. You're as bright as the sun. You're like that." Fool.
You're talking to me?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking to you. I'm not talking to your body. Yes.
Mark, it seems that when we want to be in Maya, the modes of nature makes the easier arrangement, rather than when we want to, you know, be in devotional service, it's more of an endeavor. What's with that?
So you think they're biased or something?
I think so.
No, it's just that they're taking care of... In other words, they take care of the material side. You've shown an interest in it, so then they take care of that. Right? See, it's like this. What's the problem with someone crashing a party? You have a party where you specifically invited certain people, you didn't want anyone else. What's the problem with someone crashing the party?
Dynamics.
Yeah, the dynamics. They don't belong there. They're going to throw off the mood. And in other words, the taste that you'll get from that party won't be had if that person's there. Right? Right. So, in other words, Maya's business is to keep us from crashing the party.
Okay.
Right? Because otherwise, hey, they got more stuff over there. Like that. So, because people in that party don't have any material desire. Yeah. And we have shown that we have material desire. So as soon as we decide we're giving up this material desire, then Maya says, are you sure? But you used to think it was so important and, you know, this and that. And then she'll bring out all these different things. And then if you're convinced, no, then that's fine. It's standard. You understand? Do you want to put it into another?
No, I do.
You get it? Okay.
She does that once. Like, are you sure?
No, well, it's here, okay. You know. Okay, let us say, okay, the husband and wife are there, they're going along, the mood's good and everything like that, and they're kind of at a social kind of thing like that, everyone's dressed up, and then the husband noticed, wow, that's a nice sari, you know, and some other lady, like that. So she may or may not say anything there, you know, because of the situation, doesn't want to ruin the mood, right? So then later on, then, you know, at another occasion, the wife dresses up with the sari, right? And her sari, nice. And then the husband says, oh, nice sari. And then, so what'll she say? Maybe, but in consideration of the previous point?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, then it'll be, no, you don't like, you like her sari better. Yeah. Right? And then he'll say, no, I don't want to, I don't like her, sorry. And she go, and then she'll just, oh, okay. Or she'll take it on for a while. Because to make sure. Why? You want to make sure. Right? In other words, don't do that again. Okay, so that's what Maya does.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
So it's not out of character. Like that. When such an illusion is eradicated by knowledge and renunciation, the living beings are responsible actors and enjoyers also. Okay. So illusion and knowledge and renunciation, that will get rid of the illusion of material identification. Right? Because if we identify with the Lord, we'll only see the material energy connected with the Lord. Because we identify not with the Lord, then we see it separate from the Lord. Right? We see ourselves separate from the Lord, so we see material energy as separate from the Lord. When we see ourselves as connected with the Lord, we'll see the material energy as connected to the Lord. So there'll be no illusion. Right? So we'll get to that point by knowledge and renunciation, when it's eradicated. The illusion is eradicated. But that we always have to remember, that's not the devotional service. Devotional service is the attraction and attachment to Krishna. But the reason we're not attracted and attached to Krishna is because we're in the illusion of being and we're attracted and attached to the material energy. Yes. Therefore, does that make sense?
Yes.
To remember Krishna means you can't forget it. Mm. So material energy, then we're forgetting Krishna. So both things go on at once. We'll say, always remember Krishna, never forget. Well, that's the same thing. Why say it like this? Okay, it's a poetic thing, you know, say it from both sides, make sure that you really understand the point. It, yes, but at the same time, it means don't be involved in the material energy, only be involved with the spiritual.
Yes.
Right? So, through knowledge and renunciation, one will become liberated from the illusion of material identification. Right? But only by that element of bhakti will you get into the spiritual world in a relationship with the Lord. Right? Yes?
Yes.
So, both of those things, that's why these things are discussed together and at the same time separately. Because it's not that by having knowledge and renunciation, that's bhakti. Because otherwise we think, oh, he reads so much or he's so detached, therefore he's more advanced. On one level, yes. But on another level, not necessarily. You know what I'm saying? Some people do have a more academic or more detached conditioning. So for them, that's very easy. But they're doing it for Krishna, of course. It's a benefit. But the point we're saying is, it's not that they won't have their own problem. They have a problem somewhere else.
Right. Yes. We're talking about the pious Indian family.
Yes, pious Indian family. No, they do everything very nice. The smartest, they're a good example. There aren't more pious people on the planet than the smartest, you know, as a community. Right?
Yes.
But, you know, it's not enough. So the point is, and the real point is that knowledge and renunciation outside of devotional service doesn't actually, one gets temporarily liberated. But it's only knowledge and renunciation that come from the performance of bhakti that you actually get liberated from the material energy. Does that make sense? Now, from performing devotional service, knowledge and detachment come as automatic side benefits, right? In other words, if you look on the package of bhakti, right, you know, and it says, you know, about the side effects, the side effects will be gyan and vairag.
Yes.
Like that. So you don't have to worry so much about them. Does that make sense? So, in other words, you don't have to focus on knowledge and detachment. You have to focus on bhakti. It will automatically carry.
Yes.
You understand? So if you're always remembering Krishna, then you're automatically not forgetting him.
Yes.
Right? But you have to be aware of the two elements. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay, we'll end here, because then it gets into this actors and enjoyers, so then, you know, what that means. Today's Friday? Yeah, Monday.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
jai,
Jai Nitai Gaura ki
jai. Either way, it doesn't matter. The point is by hook or by crook, you should remember Krishna. So if that means in relation to what you're particularly doing, the mechanics of it, the energies of it, the philosophy of it, Krishna himself, it doesn't matter. The point is ultimately trying to remember Krishna himself as a person.
Yeah. Okay, so that is better to think of Krishna directly than to...
It's a matter of what's appropriate for the situation.
Okay.
Right? In other words, you remember Krishna, but if you're doing an activity, then you should be aware of how to do that activity nicely.
No, I'm just daydreaming.
Oh, yeah, so then just whatever you can do, if you can just directly think of Krishna, why not?
Well, I make myself daydream.
The point is make or natural or make, as long as you can do it, that's the point. If you can do it, then it's done.
But that's higher than thinking of, like, if I'm thinking of that pot, then I'm like, oh, that...
The point is that from that qualities of Krishna, then you're supposed to go back to thinking of Krishna himself as a person.
Okay.
So if you can do that directly, then do that first. That's
okay.
The first option. If that doesn't happen, then start with that and get to Krishna.
Yeah. Okay.